7 or gale force 8 later. And that's all for now. We'll have news again at 11.
Good morning and welcome to the programme. Plenty to come over the next 2 hours, but let's get straight to that news that broke this morning when we heard about the resignation of the Minister of State, Damien English. It follows a story published on the news website The Ditch, which raised questions about a planning application he made 14 years ago. Now, Damien English said he informed on Taoiseach Leo Varadkar of his decision last night. The Minister for Justice and Higher Education, Simon Harris, is here in the studio and we're going to get his reaction in just a minute, but I want to go first to Hugh O'Connell, political correspondent with the Irish Independent. Good morning, Hugh.
Good morning, Claire.
So explain to us what's behind this resignation. Is it due to Deputy English failing to include something on his declaration, his SIPO declaration, or is it due solely to how he handled the planning application in 2008?
Well, I think it's both really, Claire, but the more serious one is the planning application in 2008. So The Ditch website reported, first of all, on Monday that Mr. English had failed to declare the ownership of a house at Castle Martin in County Meath for going back a decade on his statutory declaration, the Dáil Register of Members' Interests. And then yesterday, The Ditch published a story which said that he did not disclose that he already owned this house in Castle Martin in County Meath when he was applying to Meath County Council to build a one-off rural house in Cookstown near Kells in County Meath. The law requires that anyone wishing to apply to build a one-off home must declare that they do not already own a home or owned a home in the past in which they had resided. But Mr. English's planning application with his wife, Laura, to Meath County Council in 2008 said that he did not, the applicant did not own a dwelling. This was despite the fact that at the time, Damien English did own the house at Castle Martin, which had been undeclared on his statutory declaration going back 10 years. So that's obviously quite serious. And that's, I think, exactly why Damien English tendered his resignation last night.
But there's no breach here of the SIPO regulations, are there?
Well, I mean, that SIPO's been asked to investigate this by Paul Murphy, the People for Profit TD, who's lodged a complaint alleging a breach of the Ethics Act. But so that will take its course, I suppose. But certainly Damien English's position yesterday morning via his spokesperson was that there had been no breach of the Ethics Act. But this was before we learned of this issue where he had not declared the ownership of a house when he was applying to build another house to Meath County Council in 2008. So this sort of non-disclosure of property interests, I think, is problematic for him from an ethics point of view. Whether he's technically or whether he has breached ethics legislation, I think, is ultimately a matter to be determined by SIPO. But certainly it's serious enough for English to decide quite swiftly, within hours of the story being published, that he had to resign.
Because it's a very important part of that procedure, isn't it, if you're applying to build a one-off house in a rural area, that you have to prove the need for that house. And that includes a declaration that you do not own a property in that area and that you have never owned a property in that area.
Yes, correct. And he declared that that was the case when in fact it wasn't.
And this is the fourth ministerial resignation from this government. It's the first from Fine Gael. It's not ideal for Leo Varadkar at this moment in time, just in the first month of him returning as Taoiseach.
No, certainly not. It's less than a month since he returned as Taoiseach, and he reappointed Damien English, who's been a Minister of State for over a decade now, and I think is someone who's well regarded across his own party, but also across the opposition parties as well. I mean, I spoke to Eoin O'Brien, the Sinn Féin housing spokesperson, before Christmas, who specifically name-checked Damien English as someone he had worked with in the past and who he got on very well with and who he respected as a politician and as a minister. He had been seen as a very diligent minister, very hard-working minister who got stuff done. He's a former junior housing minister, of course. And I think, you know, his swift resignation is testament to that, his acknowledgement of that wrongdoing. But it is very serious, the wrongdoing. And I mean, I think it is something I think that isn't over from his perspective, in that Meath County Council will obviously want to take a look at this. And as I mentioned, Paul Murphy has filed this ethics complaint to SIPO, and they'll be investigating this, but certainly from Leo Varadkar's perspective, he now has to find another Minister of State to appoint to the Department of Enterprise, a department that has now lost two junior ministers in less than 6 months, with Robert Troy's resignation last August after he failed to declare a number of property and business interests on his statutory declaration.
And can you say at this point, it's very early in this story, but who's most likely to get that job?
Well, I think a lot of people in Fine Gael are talking about Neil Richmond, the Dublin Rathdown TD, who was overlooked in the reshuffle in December, and specifically got a call, I think, from the Taoiseach, or from the Taoiseach, to say that he wasn't being appointed, which is perhaps an indication of how close they are and how Varadkar might like to now consider him. But also in the mix, I suppose, would be people like Joe Carey, the Clare TD, who was also overlooked and is long-serving as a TD for 20 years. And also, perhaps, if geographically, if you're looking at it, someone like Alan Farrell, the Dublin Fingal TD. Fingal, obviously, a kind of close to the Meath area, where Damien English is from. He's been a TD for Meath West since 2002. So those three, I think, would be in the mix for the appointments, which is probably going to take place possibly before the end of the week.
Going back to when Robert Troy resigned because of non-compliance with SIPO rules, were all TDs told at that time by their party leaders to have a very, very good look at all of their affairs and their compliance to make sure that they were within the rules?
I'm not sure whether they were specifically told, but I certainly think most TDs would have had a look. And indeed, there was other TDs caught out at the time. I mean, I remember Stephen Donnelly, the health minister, had an issue around the registering a property with the RTB, which he had to clean up. And he got through that. He survived that issue, that oversight, as he might have described it. And certainly, I know anecdotally from talking to TDs around that period, a lot of them were going back and looking over their declarations to make sure that that they declared everything that they needed to declare. But in this instance, it appears Damien English didn't do that, or certainly didn't do it and discover this issue. And that's why we've landed in the place that we've landed. And I certainly think this resignation now will prompt another round of TDs going back over their records and over their property interests and business interests to ensure that all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed, because if they don't, they're going to get caught.
This is not, he says he's not in breach of the SIPO rules. This is a separate issue, notwithstanding that complaint that has gone into SIPO from Paul Murphy. Hugh, thanks very much for joining us today. I just see this statement from the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar. Last night, Damien English offered me his resignation as Minister of State for Employment Affairs, Business and Retail. He informed me that 14 years ago, when applying for planning permission, he made a declaration to Meath County Council that was not correct. It was his view, given the circumstances, that his position was not tenable. I agreed and accepted his resignation. That's from Leo Varadkar. And as I said, I'm joined in the studio by the Minister for Justice and Higher Education, Simon Harris. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Claire.
So we've heard there about the Minister of State, Damien English, that he has resigned and why. This is embarrassing for government, isn't it?
Well, look, in the first instance, I know Damien very, very well. I consider him a friend as well as a colleague, and I think this will have saddened people right across Fine Gael, and I think across the political divide. People hold, as Hugh O'Connell rightly said, Damien in very high regard. As the Taoiseach statement said, Damien arrived at the conclusion that his position wasn't tenable. Taoiseach very much agreed with that. And I do think the speed and the swiftness of the action Damien took in relation to this is a reflection of him as a person. He didn't seek to justify or explain away, but rather took the very swift and difficult decision to resign.
But is there an issue here? You know, people will ask this question around politicians respecting rules that they make, laws that they make, and feeling that they don't have to abide by them themselves.
Well, that's clearly why Damien English has taken the decision to resign, because he has made it very clear indeed in his, I see he put a video message on social media today himself, that he has not sought to explain away or simply apologise, but believes that it was wrong. He has said that very clearly, and he's taken the decision. There is obviously very clear rules in place for any office holder in relation to our annual returns. Indeed, I think they're due by the end of this month. I think people have to make a return by the end of every January. Those returns are published. Those returns are scrutinised. Those returns are available to any member of the public to see. And my colleague, Minister McGrath, indeed probably Foster Minister Donoghue now after the changeover, are obviously overseeing a reform of ethics legislation, and the government will move on that this year as well. And we'll work on a cross-party basis to see if there's any ways in terms of improvements that need to be made to the law.
And after Robert Troy resigned, did people just take it upon themselves to look at their returns? Or were you reminded by somebody in the party, be it the leader or somebody else, to make sure that what you had declared was right?
I don't recall anybody specifically reminding us, though. I certainly don't recall it. We shouldn't need to be recalled to do this. I mean, the laws are there, the laws are clear. And I think most politicians know that and take it very seriously.
I think when citizens, you know, make a mistake when it comes to something like tax or business conflicts of interest or planning, that they expect that the hammer will fall on them pretty swiftly and, you know, from a great height. Is it something that politicians don't feel?
No, and I think you've seen my colleague Damien English pay a very heavy price today.
This is 14 years on.
In resigning, and I'm also conscious of the fact, just in listening to your previous piece, that there have been referrals made and the like, so these matters may be scrutinised further, and I don't wish to cut across those processes. But Damien has taken swift action today once these allegations were made. He's made the decision that his position wasn't tenable. The Taoiseach agrees with him and he has resigned. Mm-hmm.
Just going back to the rules as they stand, Damien English said earlier in the week that he didn't have to declare that second property that he owns because it was for family use and he adhered to the rules for that reason. Do you think that should change? Should it just be now that when it comes to politicians, everything should be on the table?
I suppose it depends on what everything on the table means. I don't mean that flippantly. I mean, I do think it is right and proper that we review our ethics legislation. We're doing that. I do think it needs to be absolutely clear. I think we need to be transparent. I do think we need to reform the law in this area. I think we should do that in a detailed, scrutinised way through the Houses of the Iraq. There'll be an opportunity, no doubt, for pre-legislative scrutiny for people, including outside groups, to bring their views forward. And we should make sure we have modern, robust legislation. I do think in many ways, though, you're actually seeing the legislation that is in place taking effect, because you're seeing people scrutinising a public declaration that was made and as a result asking questions in relation to that public declaration. I am conscious, and particularly conscious in the ministerial role that I hold, in not arriving at judgments though in relation to the laws or ethics in relation to this, because it is for other bodies to do.
So you're saying that the SIPO regulations allow a journalistic organisation like The Ditch to find out when people have made mistakes?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm sorry, I'm not just saying that. What I'm saying is the SIPO declarations provide two very clear purposes. One, for members of the Oireachtas to very clearly and publicly outline any interest that they have. And there's legal requirements in relation to that, and it's for others to interpret the application of those legal requirements. I'm also saying that it's done in a public fashion and that they're uploaded on websites, and whether you're a journalist, whether you're a member of the public, whether you're one of my constituents, you can actually see the return of each individual politician.
But you can't really, because you don't have to declare a property that's being used by your family members. So you can't see everything.
Oh, sorry, you can see everything that needs to be declared. And I think the discussion as to whether there needs to be reform in this area will be dealt with this year in the Oireachtas through new ethics legislation.
All right, let's move on and talk about these gatherings at the weekend in Ballymun in Dublin. And you spoke about this yesterday. This was outside a temporary accommodation centre in Ballymun. You said that the gatherings are not a protest as far as you're concerned, that they are intimidation. Does that mean that they're illegal?
So I said that I do find them to be intimidating, and the reason I do is a very simple threshold that I hold, which is I believe anybody's home should not be the subject of a protest. I hold that across all aspects of public discourse. There are people living in those facilities. There are children living there. And I heard indeed on this radio station during the week the fear that some of the children had in those buildings. And I made the point yesterday, if somebody is standing outside your home, and this is their home.
Yeah, well, you experienced this, didn't
you? I did, but I don't wish to, I'll get to that in a moment. But if somebody's standing outside your home and shouting, let's shout to get them out, and worse, I don't think there's any citizen who'd look at that and not think that that is intimidating behaviour. We also have to be very conscious that a number of people in international protection have already gone through an extraordinarily traumatic time, have fled a trauma. And the re-traumatising effect for anybody living there, but particularly for children, I think is really worrying. There is the right to protest is a fundamental part of our democracy. There's no issue in relation to that. But I do think, and I think the Taoiseach and Tánaiste have both put this well, I do think there is a decency line that shouldn't be crossed. And I think turning up at people's home, which is what these facilities are, their temporary home, their temporary protection, I do think is extremely intimidating. And I also agree with the Lord Mayor of Dublin. I heard her on your programme. I think she's shown excellent leadership this week in relation to this not being reflective of who we are as a people more broadly. And I'm very proud of the response that this country, the people of this country, have shown in relation to very, very difficult
situations. So as current situation. Minister for Justice, what happens? How can you stand over intimidation of people in their homes? Surely that is a crime, is it not?
So it is absolutely up to the Gardaí to police these situations. I'm very satisfied that the Gardaí take these matters very seriously. I know that the Gardaí know that it is their duty to keep everybody in this country safe, and that includes people in international protection. The duty of to keep people safe is a paramount core responsibility of An Garda Síochána and myself as Minister for Justice. I'm conscious that the Gardaí have to apply their own discretion and common sense as to how they apply these within the law, and I'm very satisfied that they're going to do that.
Well, I read this morning that the plan is that the Gardaí are going to monitor more protests which are planned from today. Is that enough?
Again, I generally don't discuss discussions that I may have had with the Gardaí in relation to security matters and the likes, but I am very confident that the Gardaí take these matters seriously, that the Gardaís take protecting people's safety, all people's safety, very, very seriously, and that they will have specific policing responses in place in relation to this. But what I would say more broadly is this.
But can the Gardaí just stand there and monitor people shouting those slogans, as you just outlined, out, 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 and so on? Do the Gardaí just stand there and make sure that that's peaceful, for want of a better word?
Yeah, the Gardaí have to use their judgment in relation to the application of the law and how they specifically police things. That's how An Garda Síochána works. But I am very confident from my contact with the Gardaí that these matters are taken very, very seriously. But I do also want to say this more broadly. It's really important that as we try to have an informed debate and discussion, not just in this country, but across Europe, about migration, that we don't allow this debate to become, in my view, hijacked by people who I don't believe speak for the community. I think there's a responsibility, for example, on centrist politicians, including myself, to speak more about these issues. We know that the issue of migration is going to be a very real issue here in Ireland and in Europe. We also know that the issues that are happening in Ireland are not in any way unique to Ireland. We know that migration, we know that immigration is fundamentally a good thing. We need more people to come to our country, including meeting the skills needs and to work in our country. We see tens of thousands of people come through work permits. But we also need a rules-based system, a system that is fair to everybody, that is efficient, that is effective, that if you come to our country and you seek protection, you get, and you're entitled to that protection, you get a quick decision. And if you come to our country and seek protection and you're not entitled to it, that you also get a quick decision in terms of being asked to leave. And it's to try and have that balanced approach, I think, we need to really have.
You mentioned the Lord Mayor of Dublin, who was on this programme. She called the protests embarrassing, and she said that she as a local person felt embarrassed by it. But she also said that she felt that they had been orchestrated by small numbers of far-right activists. Now, that is absolutely fair comment. She believes that. I think you're suggesting similar here today, are you?
Well, what I certainly know, and I think what you and anybody would know if with a very quick look on social media and other places, is that there are a small number of individuals who seem to turn up at quite a number of these protests right across the country. I've no doubt that some local people might partake in protest, but I've also seen, by the way, lots of counter protests, lots of solidarity protests. I've also seen communities come together to welcome people into their community to try and keep them safe and to ensure solidarity. So we need to be careful that we don't overly amplify what has been to date. Relatively small number.
Do you not also need to be careful not to close your mind and close your ears to the people who are concerned about services in their community? Because I was looking last night at some of those social media videos that you described, and there were a lot of comments from people who are very extreme. And then there were comments from people who say, I can't get to see the dentist, I can't get to see the GP, I'm behind people in the queue who are getting access to those services for free, I have to pay and I can't get in. So if you categorise protesters as being extreme far-right people who are being bussed into areas to protest, are you not listening to the people who have genuine concerns?
No, you can do both, Claire. And I think we need to very carefully not fall for the trap that if you believe it is not decent and wrong and intimidating to turn up at somebody's home and shout about getting them out and roar and shout, particularly in a place where there's children, but indeed with a place where there's any human being, you can have that view, and you can also believe that we should have an informed, educated, rational discussion about migration in Ireland and in Europe. And what I'm saying to you as Minister for Justice, I have very specific responsibilities that I take extremely seriously about making sure we have a rules-based system in place these rules are, some set internationally, some set European level, some set in Ireland, that those rules are applied effectively and efficiently. That means making sure that when someone comes to our country, they get a quicker decision as to whether they're entitled to protection or not. It also means for somebody isn't entitled to protection that they're asked to leave quicker. Mm-hmm. It means making sure we increase the staffing in the International Protection Office. It means deportation orders recommencing. But it also means making sure, and I've heard migrant rights groups call for this, that people aren't left in limbo for many, many years. So we are, and I want people to know this morning, in the coming month, I will go to the Cabinet Committee, and I think the Taoiseach indicated some of this yesterday after our Cabinet discussions, with a series of proposals as to how we can make our rules-based immigration system operate more efficiently and more effectively. And that is listening to people. But don't need to stand outside. You don't need to stand outside somebody's home and shout abuse for your government to engage on those.
So in the meantime, while you're focused on all of those things, there are children in temporary accommodation who perhaps today might have to stand at a window and listen to someone shouting out, out, out at them, after they've been through the trauma of leaving perhaps Ukraine or wherever they've come from. And the state, it seems, is not prepared to do anything about that other than monitor the protests.
No, I mean, that wouldn't be a fair characterisation. The state, the Gardaí, will make sure that safety in our country is always paramount and that the law is applied. I have absolutely no doubt that the Gardaí take these issues very seriously. The Gardaí have to address in law a balance of rights, the right to peaceful protest, and obviously the rights that people have not to be harassed, not to be intimidated, to be safe. What I would, though, say to local people is please don't fall for this. I mean, these people are not people who have your best interests at heart. They're people, in my view, and this is my view, who spread misinformation, who seek to divide us, who seek to tell you bits of information that somebody fleeing persecution in the country is to blame for a challenge that you're facing in your family life, to pit one against the other. That is not who we are as a people. It's not that long ago in this country that people can remember others having to leave and go to the States and other places where we were welcomed. So let's not fall for the trap here. Let's have a mature, honest, informed discussion about migration. Let politicians like me and other centrist politicians step up and engage in that. But let's not allow it be hijacked by people who do not have the interests of these communities at heart. They just visit them every now and again to whip up a frenzy. And I am extraordinarily concerned about the impact that has on the well-being of people in those centres, particularly children who many have come from a traumatic situation.
I want to move on to talk about the fact that today marks 1 year to the day that Aisling Murphy, 23-year-old primary school teacher, was killed while out jogging on the banks of the Grand Canal in Tullamore in County Offaly. And we're so mindful as we have this conversation of her family and her friends and her partner today. And people will remember how shocked we all were, people taking to the streets to honour her memory and ignite a conversation around the safety of women at that time 1 year ago. Now, there was an announcement at the time about this zero tolerance strategy on violence against women. The National Women's Council say, though, that that plan is ambitious, but there needs to be a focus on funding and implementation. How confident that the ambition in that plan will be met?
Very confident. Can I firstly say I want to absolutely respect the Murphy's family request for privacy. But I do know the thoughts and minds of everyone in our country are with Ray and Kathleen and Ryan and Aisling's brother and sister today, and we think of them all. My colleague, Minister McEntee, and I'm honoured to be continuing her work during her maternity leave, adopted what the Women's Council and others rightly called, I think, the most ambitious plan ever in this area. I'm very satisfied and really encouraged that a lot of concrete actions have happened in the last 12 months or less. For example, we've seen 12 additional safe homes. We've seen ground broken on a new women's refuge centre in Wexford. Crucially, we've seen a major programme of legislation changing the law to make people safe. I'm going to get that passed by the summer, whether that's doubling the sentence for assault causing harm, which is one of the most common crimes arising from domestic violence, from 5 years to 10 years, making stalking and strangulation a standalone criminal offence, bringing in measures that will give the courts the power to tag sex offenders, major overhaul of the Sexual Offences Bill, which I'll publish in the coming weeks, that will change and maybe put a new test in relation to consent and increase a victim's rights in court. So there's a very, very strong programme of work in place. And what I say to the women of Ireland, what I say to anyone listening to this programme, is these are things that will be enacted by the summer that are concrete. But I also say to people, let's not forget what the zero tolerance strategy was about, because it was never just about laws. It was never just about one department doing something. It is about a whole of society and a cultural change in terms of misogyny, in terms of sex ed, in terms of the attitudes of the next generation too. And we have a lot of work to do in relation to that. I'm encouraged and excited by the work Minister Foley is doing, for example, in changing the SPHE curriculum for junior cert. That, I think, will start from September. Clear actions around what needs to happen in primary school in terms of gender equality, and at those very formative years, embedding that in our young people. But that is all countered and at risk from some of the social media stuff. And I think I'm being very clear here, not shirking the government's responsibility. We've a lot to do and we've an exciting programme of work underway. But this zero tolerance phrase always referred to all of society. It referred to the mums and dads of Ireland and the conversations that we have with our kids. It refers to the school place. It refers to peer-to-peer behaviour. And we need to continue to work on that. And I think the parents of Ireland, certainly many I've spoken to, I think the whole Andrew Tate incident has somewhat unnerved people in terms of the amount of the disgustingly misogynistic viewpoint that young people are perhaps getting from figures like them that are perhaps, you know, maybe even parents not aware of that on occasion.
Mm-hmm. And Ryan was talking about Andrew Tate. He's been the subject of a lot of conversation since his arrest. I'm not sure, though, how Ireland as a state polices on international social media.
So Ireland as a state can't do that on its own, but we can all do things today, and it's certainly not for me to tell any parent how to parent. But I think first and foremost, all of us being aware as parents is important and is helpful, and having that open, ongoing engagement with our children. Secondly, I do think the education system, and we can't always say the schools must do more, and I'm conscious, but I do think the education system and how it embeds those values at a very young age and the work underway are other ways. And also the very good work being done around the Online Safety Media Act by my colleague, Minister Catherine Martin, in terms of having very clear rules around cyberbullying and the like. So there are things we can do that are important and helpful.
Politicians' safety, and this arose because of Anne Rabbit and Ciarán Cannon and what happened to them at that public meeting in Galway with the bags of excrement or dung that was thrown at them. The advice from the Gardaí, do you think that goes far enough? Wear comfortable shoes, wear a personal alarm. I mean, they're fairly obvious things to do. Do you think that politicians need extra security, for example, at those types of public meetings?
So I think it's a little bit unfortunate that in recent days that common sense advice provided by An Garda Síochána, which I think is important and useful, but that has been provided, has perhaps been characterised as the extent of the Garda response. And I know that not to be the case.
What else are they doing?
So I've directly spoken to the Garda Commissioner in relation to this issue. This is taken extremely seriously. As I said last week in the aftermath of that event, it is very clearly my view and the view of the Guards that an attack on a public representative is, of course, an attack on an individual, but also on democracy. The Gardaí, and I'm not going to talk about this in great detail, but it is known to members of the Oireachtas, and let me reiterate it here today, that any member of the Oireachtas can have a conversation at a local Garda level, that the Gardaí are ready to have those conversations and are expecting and prepared for that contact from members of the Oireachtas about your individual security situation in your own community, in your own constituency. And again, without getting into any individual detail, I am aware of a number of cases where the Gardaí have put plans and supports in place. So let me say that. We need to keep, again, a balanced perspective in relation to this.
So Gardaí are already protecting individual politicians around the country?
Well, Gardaí will protect any citizen in this country who, you know, they believe that there is concern
under threat
in relation to. There are a number of things that can be done. The Houses of the Oireachtas have publicly spoken about supports that can be provided in terms of security systems at TDs or senators' constituency offices. And I can say that the Gardaí, on a case-by-case basis, look at all of these matters in relation to members of the Oireachtas in all parties and none. And so it's not about this discussion being reduced to a pamphlet being emailed around saying wear good shoes to run faster. I mean, that's not the extent of the advice. That is, of course, general and useful advice to anybody in terms of staying safe in a public
situation. But have you had conversations in the last week about extra resources being needed to protect politicians as they go about their business?
No, I've had conversations in the last week with the Garda Commissioner in relation to the general issue of safety of public representatives. And I am very satisfied from that conversation, the seriousness with which this is taken at the top levels and right throughout in Garda Síochána, and very satisfied that individual conversations are and can happen with members of the Oireachtas in relation to their own safety and security.
Okay, Minister, we leave it there. Thank you for coming in, Mr. Simon Harris. We'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.